the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello and welcome to the EDP F1 podcast, our finale to the 2012 season. You've already heard part one, so I think we better get on with part two. Here it is. Hope you enjoy. Now, as always on the EDP F1 podcast, we like to have a little focus on the old Norfolk boys, as we call them. Norfolk-backed, not entirely Norfolk-based these days, but that's fine. It's just a mere technicality, and F1 loves technicalities. Lotus, I would fair to say that they are back where they would have wanted to be after a pretty horrific 2011, and there's some real genuine signs to improve again next year.
Probably best of the rest, I would say. I think it would be fair to say to them, they're definitely cut above Mercedes this year, so that's definitely a massive improvement from last year, so hats off to them.
Fourth in the Constructors' Championship for the guys at Enstone, which was the goal at the start of the season, wasn't it, Kyle? That's all good. And as you mentioned before, Kimi giving them a lead driver, which they had missed once Robert Kubica had his accident.
Yeah, that probably was a risk at the time to take Kimi back. 2 years out of the sport, and our last sort of image of Kimi was eating ice creams and drinking Coke. Everybody else was out on the grid. So
which he did bring back every so often this season, it must be said. But good.
But they took a risk on him and it worked. And they got a perfect driver for them. He seems to fit in well there. And probably, I don't know the exact budgets, but the budget compared to the top three teams for our Red Bull and McLaren is probably a lot smaller, and they were competing with them. So, they beat Mercedes convincingly. So, perfect season for them.
Job done.
Yeah, agreed. I think we'd have liked to have seen them take that step up a little sooner. Really, the whole first half of the season just seemed to be rife with parity. It seemed to be anyone, even Williams, could step up and win a race. And at that point, you're kind of wondering, well, if Williams are going to jump up there, Mercedes have jumped up there, Perez has had a commanding drive early on in the season, where's Lotus? Why haven't they done better? I'd have liked to have seen them get to the top spot a little quicker in a race, but the fact that they got there in the end is good. And as you say, signs for next season seem very, very strong.
But consistency was key for Lotus, I think, this year. Sauber had some great finishes, some great drives, but they also had some pretty shocking ones. I suppose, so generally, Lotus were there or thereabouts consistently from start to finish, which is quite hard to achieve for a team.
Certainly is. As Caterham proved, has to be said, for a team that came onto the grid with a lot of fanfare. Every year I've spoken to the guys at Hingham, and it was, well, this year we'll hopefully nick a point, or we'll get into the midfield pack. It hasn't happened. This was the year it was genuinely supposed to happen, and again, they were arguably, well, they looked further away from it than ever for most of the season. Yet last race, they not only pinched back their 10th in the Constructors' Championship, the 7-odd million quid that means, but also 11th place finish on the cusp of their first point. But really, this winter is huge, isn't it, for Hingham?
Yeah, it's a big deal for them. I think looking at this season, to finish first, you've got to finish. And that's essentially what 10th place is really all about. Being in the right place when those, you get that sort of war of attrition with the other drivers and people fall out. So Marussia were lucky enough to grab that 12th spot earlier on in the season. Looked sort of destined for them to keep it, and Caterham came in at the last minute and swooped it away from them, and that's all they needed to do. They didn't need no more, no less. But yes, they've got to make a big difference this season with their development, mainly because it doesn't look like we're going to have an HRT next year. I've heard rumours that we might not see Marussia next year. If we do, you know, they're because they didn't get that 10th place, their budget is tiny. So in order to be part of the F1 fraternity, Caterham have really got to step it up a notch.
So they could genuinely be out on their own next year if they're not careful.
There is the potential, yeah.
But they'll have Charles Peak, so that's okay. We expecting more from them next year, gents?
I was expecting more from them this year, so I think time to be very cautious. Here's the thing. Next year, as David's mentioned many times in previous pods, because he's our tech stat man, so we know. Not a huge amount of rule changes for next year. Cars are going to be, you know, looking similar, operating in a similar way. If you're looking to this at the long haul and you really want to get the jump, when do you start looking ahead at the rule changes? When do you start making that car a reality? Because the longer you have to work on that car, hopefully the better it'll be when you put it on the grid. So next year, we could actually see similar performances from Caterham that we've seen this year, in the hope that the following year they'll actually be ready to properly contend with the mid-card. That's what I would like to see. Obviously, you know, there are races next year that you would hope to maybe see Caterham knocking a point if they've made, you know, little improvements. You've got the Monacos, the races of attrition that we all see. But occasionally there are going to be races where one particular driver finds that he drives particularly well there. I mean, look at Nico Hülkenberg, always puts in a strong performance at Brazil. Maybe there'll be a driver sat in a Caterham that finds this is my race and I can really, you know, get into Q2 and have a solid qualifying performance. But I don't see next year being the year that Caterham are going to really explode. If they're going to do it, they'll do it with the rule changes and they'll do it with the spec changes, and it'll be the year after.
I think the problem they've got is they've promised much and haven't really delivered so far. I mean, they have improved over the years, but maybe that improvement is a bit too slow. And from a Caterham point of view, Marussia were a bit too close towards the end of the season in just pure pace. But I think the point is needed next year, because we can't keep calling them a new team. It's getting to the point where they are a Formula 1 team, not a new Formula 1 team.
Absolutely spot on. We'll have to see who the second driver is that gets the other seat as well.
Can I drop in a completely unqualified rumour?
Absolutely, please do.
I'm going to make this rumour up to a certain extent, but it's based on some fact.
I should make up a jingle at this point.
Well, yeah.
Rumour!
So is David about to become stat man, yeah, tech man, yeah, and rumour man?
It's time for Tilia on rumour. Not the musician.
No. Basically, I don't know whether you guys are aware, but Caterham and Renault Cars have entered into a deal lately, and they are going to produce a sports car out of the Renault Dieppe facility, and Renault are going to brand it Alpine, and Caterham are going to brand it under their obviously a Caterham brand, and it's going to be a mid-engine sports car, and it's going to be a sort of a coalition product between Renault and Caterham. Now that when I read that piece in a magazine, I was thinking to myself, okay, well, they've got this coalition from a car standpoint. They obviously already have Renault engines in Formula 1. What's to stop Renault from investing in the Caterham Formula 1 team? Now they don't have their own works team, because Enstone is their own entity. They're nothing to do with Renault. Red Bull, yes, they might be the factory Renault team to a certain extent, but from next year they won't be called Red Bull anymore. They'll be called Infinity Red Bull Racing.
And they blamed them for the full fuel issue the other day.
Exactly. So, you know, I don't know whether or not that's actually going to, whether this is going to come to fruition, but I wouldn't be surprised if Renault kind of step in and start, you know, helping the Caterham team to get to that next level.
So after all the furore with Lotus and Caterham, we could end up having a Caterham Renault.
Maybe.
Who knows?
That'll confuse my dad even more.
as if we needed any more confusing. I hope Michael Bublé is going to give us some kind of royalties for being on in the background of this. I reckon we're going to boost his sales by at least 12.
If I had the choice of having royalties from Michael Bublé or no Michael Bublé at all, I know what choice I would take.
Moving swiftly on. I had a couple of other tweets. One from Neil Tweed. He was at Neil_Tweed. He sent in a stat, David. See if you appreciate this one or not. Sebastian Vettel and Mark Webber had the highest overtakes in 2012. 74 each. Guess who was third? Although you've probably all read it.
I've read it, so I won't guess.
I've read it, so I'm
you're looking down. It was Massa. With 65. There you go. So that's good for them.
Driver of the year. Told
poor,
you.
Poor qualifying.
Indeed. Brilliant stuff. I did say I would read out all the tweets. So my colleague at Archant, Adrian Barber, has tweeted, Formula One, prefer MotoGP.
I like the little smiley.
With a smiley face. It's a respectful smile. We like MotoGP 80. It's fine. We like it all. Brilliant stuff. Now, what have we got next? Well, we touched on some of the teams. We should obviously do our three-word team reviews as well. So, gents, what have you got? I've got a couple.
Who do you want to hear? Give me a team. I'll give you a review.
Well, have you got all, and for
I've
all
got
of them?
One, I've got one for every team.
Oh, my goodness me. Okay, well, you do it because you've got the list.
Okay. Let's start with the obvious one. The elephant in the room of Formula 1 at the moment, HRT. Quite simply, pull the plug. Lads, it hasn't worked. Shut up shop, turn over the sign in the door and just walk away and let it go. It's an absolute hemorrhage of money. We understand that, but really, you're just embarrassing yourselves at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think, in three words, jog on, son.
I have go bye-bye.
I've got not enough money.
We're all centering around the same theme there, aren't we?
Complete non-entity.
I've got Sauber, Manisha's Magic Speedsters.
Oh, that's a good one.
It must be. I'll just add this point. Sauber scored more points in 2012 than in 10 and 11 combined. 126 against 88. To F1's own.
I think Sauber finished 16 points behind Mercedes. So if it wasn't for Rosberg's win, look at where Sauber could be. Look
back
at where
on
Sauber
the Rosberg bandwagon, are we, Pedro? We are not.
Speaking of Mercedes, if I may just jump in here.
Yes, please.
Simple ones for Mercedes. Three words. Must do better, especially when you look at Lewis Hamilton taking a risk and going over there. They've got all of the money that they've got, the building that they were, the building blocks they came from with Braun being there. You know, they've ultimately been a disappointment. They've now got one of the best drivers on the grid and a former world champion now. Okay, they had a world champion in Michael Schumacher, but let's be honest, he never set things alight, really. They must do better in the next season to come.
It was just simple, a shocking season.
Certainly was.
Going back to Sauber, I've got one for them, which should be bye-bye Chico.
Indeed, I saw a piece on from Heikki, I think it was from a little while back, talking about how difficult it was when he joined McLaren and maybe some of the similarities that Perez might face when he goes there next season. It'll be an interesting one to watch. Have you got one for Sauber there, Ped?
Time for fifth. Time to take fifth place in the Constructors' Championships. No, stop messing around now. You've got good driver in Hülkenberg. You've got a very good car, surprising car. Build on that. Go forward. Take those points. And as David mentioned earlier, they've had some blazing drives, but they haven't had consistency. You get the car across the line. It doesn't have to be podiums every time. Sixth, seventh places are fine. But get it over the line and bring those points home, and you will be one of the top teams in Formula 1.
Right, what more have we got? Have we got any more? Three?
For Ferrari.
Yep.
Thanks for Alonso. That's all they can know.
Loves it. I've got Lotus edging ever back. We kind of touched on Lotus. Caterham, how'd that happen? And that's all mine.
Oh, I've got one for Williams.
Go for it, yep.
I know it only happened once, but return to relevance. And I think we all love to see it.
Mm-hmm. Just about.
Force India is not quite a force.
is that not four words?
I'm not counting A. A is not really a word, is it?
I love it. Really a word. Are we done, everyone? Red Bull.
Second half dominance.
Fair enough. McLaren?
Ultimately, disappointing season. Lost one of their best. Lost their best driver. Didn't win a Constructors' Championship. Didn't win the Drivers' Championship. How long has it been since they won something? David, Statman,
well,
do you know?
We had this discussion, didn't we, last week?
What, McLaren?
It was a long time.
I think it was the last time Lewis won the Drivers' Title.
And not only have they...
They haven't won a Constructors' Championship since Hackney.
So there you go. Yeah. So not only have they not won anything, but they've lost in a big way by losing Lewis Hamilton.
I know. Fix your parts, because the reliability has not been good enough.
For Red Bull, I suppose you could say try without Newey.
I got nearly too good.
They're stupid, but they're not idiots. But they're not stupid, to be honest.
Can I quickly just throw one out there for Toro Rosso?
Please.
The only thing I could find to say about them: straight line speed. Good work, lads. You're quick from A to B. Well done. Well done.
Love it. Is that everyone? I think Marussia is the only one we haven't done, isn't it?
Kurz, what if?
Next year, isn't it? maybe. I think they were trying to
something like that.
Grab someone.
So I've heard that they'll have Kurs next year, but this year, look at where they were. Yeah. Kurs,
Mauritius. What if not quite Caterham?
No. And aren't they feeling that pinch? I think we've done everyone. Mm-hmm. Apologies to any team we missed out. You'll survive, I'm sure. Okay, this leaves one of our final sections, the rest of the EDP F1 Awards. All the bits we've sort of forgotten about, and we're going to tack on the end. Now, I've just come up with some random awards. My drink is almost at an end, so I suppose we should keep on. In fact, some of our drinks are at an end, so I think we should probably keep it nice and tight, gentlemen. Most improved driver / team.
Most improved team I'll give to Sauber.
Agreed.
And probably driver will go in the same camp and give to Perez, because he did well enough to get picked up by McLaren. Now, whether that's actually, when we say most improved, whether that's relevant to his situation on the track, that's not what I'm going with. The fact is, he's had someone take notice of him, and he's gone to a top-tier team. I have just said they've had an ultimately disappointing season, but they are a top-flight team. I don't think anyone can disagree with that. They're one of the top 2-3 teams in Formula 1. He has improved his position dramatically. So when you talk about most improved driver, you're talking about Sergio Perez.
It's a tricky one, because a lot of the performers who you have a full year-on-year comparison probably didn't improve a lot, really, did they? I mean, Nico Hülkenberg, I thought, had a terrific second half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to say most improved team would have to go to Lotus, I think, just for the comparison step-up from the year
like
before. Most improved driver, if I was talking about from 2011 to 2012, I have to say Lewis Hamilton, because he made fewer mistakes this year and has been on it all the time.
Had his head together.
Yeah, exactly. Other than that, I'd say other than that, probably most improved driver for me, if it wasn't Hamilton, would probably be Senna, because he's proved to me this year that he is actually a credible driver. And he is a worthwhile addition to a midfield team.
But might be without a drive next year, although Eddie Jordan clearly thinks he's going to Caterham. Kyle?
My most improved driver was Jean-Marc Vergne. It was during the season. Start of the season, I wasn't too impressed. I thought it was just... It was a shame. Obviously, Gremi and Al-Ghashari were chucked out, should we say, from last year. But towards the end of the season, I thought, he deserves to be in Formula 1 now. And, he's promising for the future, should we say. And our team would be Williams, because they had a shocking 2011. And to come back and win this season was good to see the old Williams back on the top of the podium.
Absolutely. Good chance, gents. Absolutely. Highlight of the season. I know what I'm doing.
Go on.
Carry on.
Hit us with it.
That was it. that radio message. Although that might be... carry on. No, you give me your highlights of the season. I think I've overdone it. Carry on.
Okay.
I don't know, actually. It really is one of the tougher ones.
Previous seasons, we could have had... You know, it would have been easier to pick out a highlight, as opposed to this season has actually been pretty amazing, to be fair. It's been quite an epic season from start to finish, with a few dodgy races thrown in for good measure. But I mean, it's hard to say, because I'm only going to really be able to remember the stuff that happened in the last few races, because my memory is that poor. Everything else personal blends into one. I'd probably say Kimi in Abu Dhabi getting on the top step was quite a highlight for me. Seeing the Iceman returneth rather than cometh.
I think Seb's drive to the front third in Abu Dhabi after having to start from the pit lane.
I mentioned it earlier, but it's going to be Kamui Kobayashi's third place in Japan for me, highlight of the season.
I'll have to go for Valencia, because we don't expect much from that track, but it did prove to be a good race.
It did. And will it be back next year?
I don't know, but it should have won the award for most improved race.
Most improved race? Yeah. Well, there you go. Track of the year. Should we throw one in? Track of the year?
I've got to give it to the new track in the USA. Austin, USA gets that hands down. Yeah,
brilliant. I agree. Come on, the US, the new home of Formula One. Not the EDP Formula One, sadly. Unless anyone wants to ship us out to the States.
Say, we'll see what your expenses are like.
You did win the lottery, didn't you, David? After talking about paying for our trip to Austin, you won on the lottery.
Yes, bear in mind, I only won £65. Which is the most I've ever won on the lottery, but still, it's not enough for an all expenses paid trip to Austin next year, unfortunately.
No, okay. Yeah. We might hire the RV for an hour. No, it's not even going to do that, is it, to be honest? Brilliant. I've got comic moment of the season. I don't know what I'm doing.
I did like Kimi Räikkönen getting lost. was an outstandingly good comic moment, so I'll probably go with that because I don't think I've laughed out loud as much in a race as I did when he was doing that.
His radio calls, obviously, when he was on his way to victory, were my favourite.
I'd say probably from a comedy moment point of view, in terms of the thing that made me laugh the most was probably the profanity on the podium from Kimi and from Sebastian. That was. Yeah, quite comical.
I have to agree. I think Kimi Räikkönen getting lost in Brazil. I just loved him in the Marshall. Yeah. There, just where is he going?
The way he turned around the car. Yeah. I think we mentioned that last week, didn't we? Yeah.
So we're all in agreement then that Kimi is basically the funniest.
Kimi,
Formula 1.
Now, isn't that a great comeback?
But do you know what? If we told him that, I don't think he'd crack it. I think he'd be offended. I think he would not even crack a smile. He'd look and just be like, so?
I'm not even sure he'd care.
Yeah, exactly.
Best TV pundit.
Best.
We've got a choice of channels this year and everything.
I am actually going to step out and give this to one. I'm going to give it to the BBC's Gary Anderson. Quite simply because at the beginning of the season, I genuinely sat there and thought, get this guy off TV. He does not know how to handle talking on camera, or he doesn't know what he's doing. He's very clearly out of his depth. But as race went by and the season progressed, he started getting more settled, he started getting more familiar with his role, and this man has so much knowledge that when he actually finally found a way to express it to you, he really explained things very, very well. And it's that technical edge that I think coverage has been lacking, because you can talk about how great an Adrian Newey car is, but until someone can... And forget this iPad and touch screen and big screen stuff. He gets a sheet of paper and he gets a picture of a Formula One car on it, and he draws with a marker where the air is going to flow over it and how it's going to disrupt. And that's how you explain it to a lot of people who are watching Formula One. You know, I don't need to get it too technical. So Gary Anderson on the BBC gets it.
It's a great answer, and it's interesting that maybe a couple of people who went from radio to television this year didn't quite seem to have the same impact as when they were working with moving images.
No, I mean, I must admit, I can't agree with Ped purely for that, because I've been very Sky oriented this year. I have Sky Sports. They have probably overall, it's probably the slightly, they definitely have the better coverage in the sense that they cover all of the races. So, you know, it stuck to Sky, and I was happy with what they were doing. But actually, my pundit of the year isn't a Sky presenter, and I'm going to have to give it to good old DC for you know, going back to that that podium situation. Actually, how he handled that, I thought he was very, you know, he was rock solid, very professional. Moved on. He didn't try and do that usual kind of "I apologise for their language" rubbish kind of thing, because you didn't say it, so why are you apologising? And he handled it really well, and even when he got champagne poured all over him, he did it really well. And he's had to put up with Eddie Jordan for another 12 months. So.
And alongside Martin Brundle, you know, he's been properly working, striding the same grid as him this year,
he's
up to it.
He's filled those boots quite well, I think. You know, like I say, I haven't really given BBC the the viewing that I probably ought to have done to give them a fair view, but, you know... Fair play.
Fantastic. Kyle?
I have to go for Martin Brundle. I haven't watched too much of BBC, so it's a bit hard to give an opinion on them, but he was the main reason why I watched on Sky, so he's always a nice balanced view from Mr. Brundle, and also for his grid walks, he just get better and better, so...
Yeah.
He's a very knowledgeable man, and he does express that knowledge to you without sort of lording it over you at the same time.
And he's
very,
local.
Very likely.
And he's local.
And he's local.
He's local.
Yeah, and he knows everybody as well, which is great. You know, it's really, really handy when he just bumps into people, you think, oh, the hell is that? He knows who it is.
Apart from in Monaco, when he didn't know half the people he was talking
that's
to,
I think the best moments
was that last year when he was getting people introduced to him. He was like, "Who are you? Should I know you?" No, yeah. Okay, fine.
Papers, I don't know.
Yeah. Fantastic. Have we got any other awards? Have you gents got any awards? Okay. Or any awards?
Joint award.
Oh, yeah.
Marussia and McLaren for not having a step nose.
Fair enough.
Prettiest car of the year award.
Prettiest car of the year.
I've got worst Vettel helmet design, because as we know, he changes them more than he probably changes his underwear. That's just a rumour. David told me that, because with his rumour mongering. but for me, it was a toss up between the wooden effect one that he wore in Texas and the LED topped one in Singapore. And I'm going to go with the LED one because I know it's only silly and it sounds silly, but all the circuitry to wire that is extra weight in your car. All right, now that's irresponsible as a racing driver, okay? It's ridiculously pretentious, and it doesn't need to happen.
They can't have helped with the aerodynamics of the helmet.
Exactly,
got see, bloody it's LEDs just ridiculous. Sticking out of them.
Well, to be fair, the driver is probably the least aerodynamic part of the car anyway. True. So probably doesn't make a huge amount.
Closed cockpit, it'd seal that off, wouldn't it?
It's not going down that road again.
You've got one, David.
I have got one. I even scribbled on a bit of paper and showed it to you earlier on.
About 30 minutes ago.
This is off the back of Perry's Driver of the Year accolade. I'm going to go with Teammate of the Year. So the guy who may not have achieved the most, but was the best teammate for the number one driver in that team.
Who are you going to give that to, David?
I think it's a bit of a difficult one for you to be able to guess, but surprisingly, I'm going to give it to Massa. just everything he did in Texas and in Brazil, if you discount the rest of the season, just those two races alone showed that he is strong enough to be able to say, right, I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it for the team, and I'm going to do the best I can to help my teammate achieve what he needs to achieve. Even though I'm not going to get all the glory, at least I can maybe sort of bathe in some of his radiance a little bit, you know. Which he did. So, yeah, I have to take my hat off to Felipe. He is a top gentleman.
I agree with you. As we know, he's my driver of the year. But can I give special honourable mention to Jenson Button as teammate of the year for purely surviving Twittergate with the smoothness and class that only Jenson Button can. Yeah. Surviving that whole issue with Hamilton kicking off on Twitter and still being Jenson Button about it. He gets honourable mention, but of course, it goes to Massa.
That would be my three-word review for Jenson. I think smoothness and class. I love that. That's very good.
I had much more to that, really.
No, it's fine. Yeah. I was going to mention about the best-looking cars, of course. Next year, they will have modesty boards on the cars to hide up the step noses.
Which is good.
Which is ridiculous, but will help obviously with the profiles. Thank goodness.
I'm kind of used to them now, to be honest. Yeah. You don't really notice them.
All change. If you're not moving forward, you're standing still in Formula One, or it might be something like that. All right, then. Well, really, this epic finale to our EDP F1 podcast season has all been about this next moment, the official Prediction League results.
Woo!
Yes.
I'm excited.
A drum roll, please, Michael Bublé. Now he's decided to shut himself down. That's a shame.
Really?
Now, we as pundits, myself, Michael Bailey, Kyle Cumbers, Perry Hamilton, David Tillier, of course the great and good John Luton, who can't be with us sadly tonight, Ben Weaver and Ben Mouncer have all tried to predict races, podiums, fastest laps, random points.
Kimmy's breakfast cereal.
All kinds of randomness.
In fact, the one thing we didn't try and predict was first corner retirements. Because I think if we tried predicting that after a few races, we'd have been quids in.
Too easy. We had to set the bar higher. Very. Through all our podcasts, we've had it. And through a unique, convoluted algorithm that I created on my own, locked in my bedroom, I have devised the final results. May I just announce that now, in seventh place, Ben Mouncer on 0%. Followed by sixth, Ben Weaver on 0%, but two shots at it rather than Ben Mouncer's one shot. Gents, those two really didn't have the lion's share of the guesses, but we appreciate their time and their punditry. In fifth place, on 20%, with 3.2 from 16. I don't know what that means, but it's 20%. It's Perry Hamilton.
Yes, that's right. I'm like, no, whoop, whoop. I don't understand how the algorithm works, but I'd like to point out that I've been at every single one of these, and therefore I feel my predictions may have taken a bit of a hit in that respect. That, you know, the more you have to do something, obviously the worse you're going to get at it.
If there was
that's how it works, right?
If there was a Prediction League teammate of the year, Perry, you would get that one.
Oh, you do you know what? I will take that. I'll be happy. I will settle for fifth place.
In fourth place, with 29% and 4.62 from 16. It's Michael Bailey. It's me.
Hey.
Which means our top three goes as follows. In third place, with 0.97 from just three attempts, he was efficient. 32% ratio of success. is John Luton. Well done, John.
Well done, John.
We won't
well
swear
done,
at you on the podcast just afterwards. Which means in second, well, we've got two players, Dave and it's Kyle. How are you feeling?
Pretty tense, actually.
David?
Slightly X-Factor final.
Yeah.
Let's not drag it out that long.
To be honest, sitting opposite the Oracle, I feel like I've lost already.
Well, you give him that name. In second place with 36%, 4.68 from 13. David Tillier.
Oh, well played,
which
David.
Which means the
at
winner.
At least I predicted my second place correctly.
Does that change things?
It means in first place, with a terrific record of 3.1 successful guesses out of 8. 39% success. It is the Oracle, the man always known as the Oracle, and when he returns, hopefully for 2013, to defend his title, will still be known as the Oracle. Kyle Cummins.
What a clutch.
Anything you'd like to say, Kyle?
So thank Mum and Dad, you know, for supporting me through this tough year
and giving you the foresight.
Yeah, but yeah, it's been a good year. I've probably enjoyed it. So,
well, you would have known that at the start.
That's a shame. I didn't put any money on the predictions.
Is this now the time to tell Carl that I actually did get a bottle of champagne from the bar at number 12 and we might actually spray him with it after the podcast?
I think we should. And we've got some cowboy hat with Fennelly written on it. Some sort of dodgy knockoff hat. With that, we are done, gentlemen. That is it for the 2012 Formula One season. Thank you so much for your time.
It's been good.
It's been good to be here.
Thank you to John and the Benz. Been a pleasure, hasn't it, David?
Yeah.
To John and the Benz as well for their time. Thank you all for listening, your contributions throughout the 2012 season. It has been a blast. We will be back in what is frighteningly about 3 months, 2 months. We'll be back maybe for testing. We'll throw in some pods. We'll do some previews. We'll check out those modesty boards. And we'll see what we have ahead for 2013. But for now, thank you, everyone. And bye for now.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.